Welcome back to the Leading LDS podcast. My name is Kurt Frankham, the creator of Leading LDS, which is an online resource for LDS leaders to understand the world of leadership as they are asked to serve as leaders. Today is another episode of How I Lead, where we interview various leaders in the church and understand the practical side of their calling, how they approach meetings, organize home teaching or visiting teaching, and just execute the many responsibilities that face a leader in the LDS church. Today we have a very interesting guest, so interesting, I don't even know who he is. Mysterious, right? Well, he is known in the Twitter world, or better said, the Twitter stake world, as LDS EQ Prez. Shares many tweets and information from a perspective of an Elders Quorum president. Now, he is actually a real-life Elders Quorum president in his ward and has a lot to share about how he approaches his calling and really gets work done. Check it out. Today, we have a guest that I don't really know who he is because he's got a mysterious Twitter handle called LDS Elders Quorum President. Is that right, Elders Quorum President? Or what's your Twitter handle?
LDS EQ Prez.
EQ Prez, that's right. Mm-hmm. And now you maybe have to explain to me a little bit, because again, as I mentioned, I don't know his real name, but nonetheless, he is an actual Elders Quorum President.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
Tells me. And tell me about, I know there's this Twitter stake out there. I've seen it. I haven't really looked into it, but there's other callings out there. I know there's I think it's a ward clerk or a state clerk that's out there. There's Relief Society presidents and so forth. So how did all this begin with you as LDS EQ Prez?
So where the actual origins of this Twitter stake began, I'm not really sure. I think I came onto it a little bit after the fact of some of these other people. I think one of the key pioneers, if you want to use that word with that, is the LDS bishop. And the account that he started, and then I think from there the callings just started to pick up. I know when I joined in, kind of some of the key people were the bishop, the state clerk, the Sunday school president, and the Relief Society president, and then it's just kind of bloomed from there. I think we have a primary president, a young men's president, there's a stake president, there's a bishopric counselor, a high counselor. There's quite a few people on there now.
Wow. So full-fledged ward councils out there making it happen, huh?
Uh-huh. I think there's even a 70 who's joined probably about a month or two ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. No apostles yet?
No, not yet. I think they would chastise us and tell us to get back to work.
Yeah. Elder Bednar's not secretly tweeting or anything like that. So
not that we know
of. That would be
cool,
but, you know, probably not going to happen. I'm not going to hold my breath for that one, so... Well, that's cool, and I've followed some of your tweets, and you've been kind enough to retweet some of my stuff, and I do know the LDS bishop Twitter handle out there, and he is actually a bishop as well, right? But nobody really knows his identity.
No, not that I know of. I know he's from England, but that's about it.
Mm, all right. I'll have to chase him down and see if we can get him on here. So, but nonetheless, Elders Quorum President, you are an actual Elders Quorum president that is faithfully serving. How long have you been in that role?
Actually, this month will be 3 years.
Wow, nice. So you figured it all out at this point, and that's why we're talking to you.
I don't know if I figured it out yet, because they haven't released me. So.
Oh, okay. All
hopefully,
right.
I'm getting
true.
There.
That's generally how it goes. So, well, maybe give maybe some general background. Again, nothing that's going to out you mm-hmm. by any means, but raised in the church, what's some of your, did you serve a mission and those types of things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was raised in the church. I was in a ward for the first 10, 11 years of my life, and then shortly before I became a young man, they redrew the lines, and I was actually sent in my family to a branch to help them become more established. So from the time I was 11 until I left on my mission, I was in a very small branch to the point when I was a young man, became a deacon. I was the only active young man. The other one was a less active priest. And so young men every week was me sitting across the desk with the branch president. Felt like I was getting an interview every week. And wow. Then when I got older, you know, more people came to the branch. But even then, like our young men's president that they had when I was a priest, he didn't have any counselors. I was his, like, de facto first counselor. because he was also the second counselor in the branch. So he was pulling double duty. I think that experience, though, was nice because it shows you how to really adapt and how the church can still function on every level. So that was definitely an interesting experience. That branch did become a ward when I was on my mission. So I served a mission in Mexico. And then when I got back, there was a ward, and we were there, and my wife and I grew up in the same stake. And we recently moved whenever I started graduate school. Now we're in a ward that's more formally, even more formally established than the one we came from. It's like a almost a traditional type of war that you would see somewhere like in Utah or Idaho.
Okay, cool. All right, I'm just taking notes here. I think I'm going to guess you're in Brazil. That's my guess right now. No, I'm just kidding. Well, that's cool. So you've kind of had some experience in maybe a not so established or traditional ward and probably gained some good experience from that, would you say?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You really have to step up and put more forth, like as far as effort and service in order to make things work. So,
yeah, cool. And then I think you mentioned a little bit, you've been on Twitter for a while now, probably with a personal account and so forth, and then saw the kind of the Twitter stake with the different callings and thought you'd just jump in and be fun?
Yeah, I saw some of the, I guess the word that most people use is snark that they had, related to church in general. It's not we're not being derogatory in any kind of way. We're not putting down the church. Right. I think it's the opposite of that. We're just kind of embracing this peculiar culture that we have and providing these observations that we come across with the people that we interact with and our just our culture and society and culture in general.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've noticed that I've enjoyed, you know, following different of these calling Twitter tags are out there. It is kind of fun, you know. You kind of make light of just the silly cultural aspects at times, but other times you're putting out good resources that would be interesting to other Elders Quorum presidents or respective callings that are there. So, and how long have you had the Twitter handle?
I'm not sure of the exact time frame. I want to say it's probably a year and a half, 2 years, maybe.
Oh, okay. Cool. So about half the time that you've actually been an Elders Quorum president.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yes.
Okay. And I would assume that you'll just continue on when your release does come, or.
Yeah. So I was actually talking to the state clerk guy about that a while back, just through like messaging, and he asked what my plans were, and I was like, well, I'm gonna keep going. The handle's gonna stay the same. The only thing that I'll change is, instead of saying LDS EQ President as my like the handle, it will just say LDS EQ President Emeritus.
Oh, nice.
So I'm just going to add that. Yeah.
You know, I often wonder if that word Emeritus, if people outside the church ever bust that out. I don't know. It just seems like such a Mormon word because we use it so officially. But obviously there's other roles for it. But that's cool. So you at some point you'll be Emeritus status, Elders Quorum President, and still be tweeting the good information that you do. So that's cool. So with that, let's transition into really your real life calling, because they do call you president around your ward. And I just kind of, again, as I started leading LDS, I just, you know, I'm no expert. I don't try to be. I've learned a lot in the I guess it's been almost 4 or 5 years since I've been doing leading LDS. And I just feel like, you know, if more leaders could share what they're doing, even just the practical things, you know, we've got handbooks and bishops and state presidents to guide us on more of the spiritual revelatory things, which is important as in regards to the keys you hold. But what about the practical things? You know, what things have you learned and so forth? And so that's why I always love to just take time with specific leaders and figure out how they lead. And there's so much we can learn from that. So you've got some good experience, 3 years now in this calling, and I asked you maybe go through 4 or 5 things that you find is kind of the keys that you've taken away, that if you were to start this over or talk to a new Elders Quorum president elsewhere, these are maybe some things you'd highlight on. The first one you said is this calling is all about marketing. Maybe expound on that. What do you mean by marketing?
Yeah, so one of the things I picked up on pretty quickly is that if you want the guys in your quorum to be engaged and kind of get behind some of the things that you as a presidency have kind of come up with, it's all about how you present the information to them. So it has that spin factor to it, you know. I mean, for example, a couple years ago we started, it's technically just a blog, you know, a place where you can go and have the announcements and some other things we have set up. It's a nice convenient way to kind of just get a snapshot of things that are going on and connect with other people. But if you tell the guys, hey, we got this blog out there, they're not going to get that interested into it. So we made a decision early on that, you know what, this is it's a website. It makes it sound a little more professional, a little more established. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to kind of better engage them with that, to kind of promote, hey, let's go check this thing out, because the main goal we had with that was getting them more engaged with living the gospel 24/7 and not just that 3 hours they were at church on Sunday. And I know with like activities too, it's all about how you market the activity and present that information to them. We have an activity that we started doing every year. It's kind of our big one for the year. It's just our trivia night. You know, we'll get together. I'm the MC with the trivia questions. We have the football game on in the background and we'll get some pizza and wings and just have a good time. And so the first year we did it, it went really well. The second year we wanted to go even bigger and we wanted to get people excited about it. So I recruited other people to help me. And, you know, it's kind of, some people might say it's manipulative, but I got together with two guys. I was like, hey, you guys were here last year. You had a really good time. I need your help. I'm going to announce our next trivia night today in Elders Quorum. And I looked at one guy who was he's very extroverted, very outspoken. I was like, here's what I need you to do. I'm not asking you to lie in any kind of way. I know you had a good time. So I want you to interrupt me as I'm giving the announcement and say, you know what? I just have to say this and just go on about how great of an experience it was.
That's great.
And then I was like, and so then what I'm going to do, I'm like, is anybody else there, you know, that can tell us what kind of experience they had? And then we kind of planned out the other guy was going to raise his hand. Then the unexpected consequence of that was that there were tons of people who raised their hand, not just the guy that we had, I guess you could say, prepped for that.
He primed the pump, huh?
Yeah. So it's just, you know, getting more people involved with that. So it's not just somebody, the Elskorn president or one of the counselors saying, hey, guys, got this activity you're really going to love. But no, we have the people they're sitting next to. There's, you know, has no, I guess, ulterior motive to get people to come. And so it's all about, you know, like I said, that spin factor and how you present the information.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people may hear the term marketing like, oh, like, I don't want to be some sales guy in my quorum, but this is the basis of communication and not only just relaying information, but appealing to the emotional side of the individuals in the quorum. That's really what you're doing, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so every once in a while we'll have like guys get up, and I mean, this one guy, he was moving out and he wanted to, you know, make the announcement to see if people could help out. And then he said he had a piano. And I looked at him and I was kind of joking around. I was like, you're not supposed to have the piano until after they get there, man. Come on. So it's all about, it is how you present the information and what you share and how you share it.
It's true. And that's cool. That's really cool. So as far as communicating, you kind of use the example of an activity, which that can be a tough sell sometimes when you say, hey, we're going to hang out, and then, you know, people show up or they're apprehensive to going or whatever. Any other ways you've kind of marketed certain communication that comes to mind? Or
I mean, there's different things that we do. Because we sponsor a lot of the ward activities as well. One of them a couple years ago was a 5K race. And we were going to do it last year. We got ran out. And we have it planned again for this year. And so we're starting to announce it. And so that's something that gets announced to the whole ward, you know, not just the Elders Quorum. And so we can kind of say, hey, you know what? Last time we had a really great time. We had people from all organizations come. We had a high priest there. We had Elders Quorum. We had Relief Society. We had youth. It's like we even had some primary kids come and do it. And then you can kind of joke around a little bit, like, we're not trying to make you guys feel bad, but, you know, we want everybody to come, and if a primary kid could do it, then you can do it too.
Nice. Okay, cool. So it sounds like you got some pretty cool activities, 5K, and then how often do you do the trivia night?
Since that's our big activity, we do it just once a year. But throughout the year, we'll have other activities as far as we'll have educational firesides. So we recently had one on the steps that somebody should go through on buying a home, things they can expect with that. We've done it on car safety, taxes, financial planning, different things like that. And then we'll have our social activities too, like a game night where we have like a Mario Kart tournament, see who can win that, and just different things.
So do you usually have like a guest speaker come that's a professional in those areas that can kind of speak to those educational things?
That is the ideal. If we can find someone in the ward with that type of experience or expertise, we'll go to them first. I know like the guy that we had do our house hunting fireside, he was very tenacious in his negotiations when he bought his house, and he was very familiar with the process. So we thought that he would be best suited for that. We had one before on like improving marital communication. So there was a mental health counselor in the ward. So we had him present that, and you know, it was really successful.
Cool. Right on. Well, that's helpful. The next item you mentioned was choosing counselors who compliment you. I know a lot of people, especially when it's your first leadership role or in a presidency where it's up to you to pick those counselors, that can be a daunting task. So maybe expound on what do you mean by counselors that compliment you?
Yeah, so prior to becoming the Elders Quorum president, I was actually the first counselor for 2 years with two different presidents, and I had the experience of working in those presidencies with those guys, and I would notice how things were being done, and especially with the first guy that I served with, it was just, he had his strengths. And I noticed that he had been doing it for a while, and he picked counselors, me and the second counselor, who complimented him. So if you recognize that you have a particular strength, let's say you're good at ministering, and you pick two counselors that are good at that too, but then none of you are good at the admin part, where you can't manage the actual quorum, well, then you kind of have a problem. And so part of choosing counselors is, one, recognizing what your own strengths and weaknesses are as they come to the gospel in general, and the actual part where you have to lead and manage a quorum, and just kind of being honest with yourself. You know, I looked at it and like, okay, I got the admin stuff down. I know how to run this quorum and how to organize it, but what I need to work on is ministering. I can do the one-on-one thing, but then with me and the type of personality I have, I'm not very outgoing, so I'm not, you know, always motivated to go out and to speak someone new that I might not recognize that's at church for the first time. And so I didn't want that to hold us back as a quorum. So I called counselors that, you know, maybe make up for that. And then they kind of motivate me because, you know, it's almost contagious. You know, they start being very outgoing, active, fellowshipping other people. And you kind of want to get on that too. So it's almost infectious. And so it actually helps us kind of complement each other very, very well.
I see. And maybe go a little bit deeper into that as far as how you run. Obviously, an Elders Quorum president can delegate and run their quorum as they please. They've got a lot of freedom there to do that. I remember I was Elders Quorum president in the YSA ward where I met my wife. I was like a mess. It was my first leadership calling, and I was doing everything, like at the church, you know, organizing home teaching lists. I don't think I ever made a visit to anybody to minister to them. So how do you break that up? Do you have a system that you do with your counselors?
Yeah, so what we'll do a lot of times is when we have a meeting, it's at a set time, and we try to go through the agenda as quickly as possible and be very efficient on that. And then if we end early, then we use that extra time to go out and to visit with someone or to focus on some type of fellowshipping other members in the quorum. And then we also try to set specific times where we go out as a Elders Quorum presidency and kind of do splits, if you will. So I'll go with the second counselor or the secretary, and then whoever's left will go with each other. And we'll go out and visit these people in their homes or wherever it may be. Or at least a lot of times what it comes down to is we try to visit these people, but they're never home.
Yeah.
So we just do different things. It just depends on what the situation is and what we're trying to accomplish, I guess.
Okay. And roughly how many elders do you have in your quorum?
The last time I looked at the roster, if you look at elders and prospective elders, we're approaching 90. I would say that probably 40 to 45 are active.
Okay.
So we have a decent-sized quorum that's in class every week in their quorum meeting.
And you mentioned earlier you're in a more of a traditional Utah-type ward, not meaning you're in Utah, but and so geographically, are you spread out, or are you able to make visits without two-hour drives? Or?
Yeah, so there's no two-hour drives. It is more of a metropolitan area in one of the suburbs. So your home teaching companion, they're not going to like live in the next door to you. And the people that you home teach, not necessarily going to be a walking distance. You will have to get in your car and drive. Mm-hmm. But most, we are very geographically minded when it comes to that, as far as assigning you a home teaching companion and families that are close by to you. Because the more obstacles that we can reduce to that, more likely that we can get you to go out and serve those people. So like my home teaching companion is probably 3 miles from where I'm at. It's probably about 5-10 minute drive with traffic. And my home teacher, he lives in the complex next to us. So he's only maybe a 10-minute walk, 2-minute drive.
Oh, okay. Makes sense. All right. So the next one you mentioned is that you shouldn't surround yourself with yes men or sheep. But yes men are tempting to surround yourself with. I mean, they make you feel pretty good. So maybe expound on that. What do you mean by avoiding the yes men?
Yeah, so if you are surrounding yourself with people like counselors who are just not very outspoken, just kind of go with the flow and don't express themselves and their opinions, then you're going to, you know, only hear back what you want to hear. And that's not necessarily the best thing. Just because you're the Elder's Quorum president and you have that power of revelation on your side doesn't mean you're always going to make the best decisions, because I'm a firm believer that in that position, part of the revelation process is getting the input from those around you. So you have to, one, create an atmosphere where they're comfortable sharing that, but also, like I was saying, kind of surround yourself with people who are just going to tell you like it is. I always appreciate those people in the church and in my personal life and work, whatever it may be, who just, you know, they rub some people the wrong way because they're a little too direct and a little too frank. But I think sometimes that's needed. I had a second counselor before. He was very direct. He was like, dude, that's stupid. No, we're not doing that. And then what the consensus was, you know, he wasn't alone in that, but he needed kind of to start that process. He had to put it out there for other people to feel more comfortable in saying, yeah, maybe there's a better way we can do that. And so if you have that out there, it helps you come to a more consensus as a presidency, so that when you do something, it is more in line probably with what the Spirit was wanting you to do, instead of you just kind of running with it.
Okay.
An example I thought of was from a couple years ago. There was a lesson that we were planning and involved some like a social aspect. We had to get up and interact with others, kind of a get to know you type thing. And our secretary was like, you know what? They've done that kind of stuff at work before, and I hate those kind of activities. And so mm-hmm. we weren't in agreement. So we didn't do it. You know, it wasn't right. He ended up moving shortly after that. And once he was gone, the new secretary came in, and we were all on board with it, so we did it then. And so I see it as it was a good idea, but we needed someone to say, no, it doesn't fit, because it didn't need to be done at that time. You know, mm-hmm. when we did, it was probably more appropriate. And so that's the Spirit's able to work through the people that you surround yourself with so that revelation can be more effective.
Perfect. Cool. The next item you mentioned was that technology can be leveraged to our advantage to work more efficiently and effectively. And I know we'll dive into this more in a second, but maybe expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, so I think one of the things you had mentioned earlier as far as when you were called as an Elder's Quorum president is how you try to do everything yourself. And, you know, sometimes it can be very overwhelming because there's quite a few things that we have to do with this calling. And I think the more things that we can use technology for to make it easier, the better off that we're going to be. It's there as an asset. I think one of the things that we learned in this past general conference is that technology is increasing precisely so that we can be more effective in spreading the gospel and establishing his kingdom here upon the earth. And so I think we have to take advantage of that and use it to its full extent. How that's done on an individual quorum basis will depend largely in part on the type of quorum that someone has, because every quorum will be a little bit different. Some quorums are a little more tech savvy than others. I know with our quorum, we have a lot of young guys, grad students, so they are very tech savvy. You know, these are people who have smartphones and are checking the email multiple times per day. So if we go out and, you know, we have a website they can go to, we send out emails, things like that, it's a little bit easier for them to get that information and actually engage in that way.
Okay, perfect. And we'll come back to technology in just a second, but
sure.
The final thing you mentioned was ministering trumps administering every time. I couldn't agree with you more. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can be the best administrator all day long, but in the end, no one's going to care if you're not actually going out and reaching out to these people. I know there's an old kind of sales slogan. People don't care about how much you know until they know how much you care. And so if you want to be effective as a leader, you have to get those relationships. You have to establish them. I know one of the things that I did when I first came into this call, and I think a lot of Elders Quorum presidents do this when they first come in, like, how can we improve on home teaching? That's kind of one of the things that's always associated with the Elders Quorum president, home teaching. And so how to best improve that. And so I would go on, I went on to LDS.org, and I went on your site and a couple of others, getting all this information about what we could do to improve on home teaching. And the consistent answer that I kind of saw from the leaders, from the words of general authorities and the leaders, was quality instruction during quorum meetings and one-on-one relationships that you have with them during PPIs and other visits. So it's not just some new approach on how to organize the routes or how to motivate them or having a key lesson or anything like that. It was just the basics, making sure that every meeting you have, when you have when the lesson's presented, that their spirit is felt, it's edifying for all of them. It sustains them in their roles as priesthood holders. And then that you as a presidency are meeting with them individually as well, and you have that connection with them. And then everything else kind of just flows from that.
Yeah, perfect. I love that. And even last week, somebody asked me, they said, you know, Bishop, what counts as a home teaching appointment? Does a phone call count? Can we just visit at the door? And they were so overwhelmed with what a home teaching visit is. I just said, you know, let's just step back a moment and really figure out what we're doing here. I mean, I don't care if you're in their home or not. Like, do they feel like you care about them? Do you even know them? You know, and to me, we get so caught up with, okay, we got our visit done, but do they really feel like they are being home taught rather than just being visited once a week? And so I think that's a powerful skill to develop as a leader, is to really truly understand how to minister. And as I gave that example of when I was Elders Quorum president, I was just, I mean, I don't know if anybody even remembers who I am, you know, not that that's important, but you know, I was just in front of the clerk's office trying to figure out all these home teaching names, and I wasn't really doing anything. I kind of missed the point, but it was a good learning opportunity for me. So, great point there.
Okay.
Maybe take me through, what's your typical week, and maybe obviously most of it is focused on Sunday. Like, how are the meetings structured? What sort of schedule do you go through on Sundays? How do you approach your quorum meeting? Those types of things. Just the practical day-to-day stuff.
Okay. So in Sundays in particular, the way our current quorum meetings and then our current, like, are the ward meetings as well, as far as like PEC, ward council, and then our Elders Quorum presidency meetings, they kind of alternate weeks. So one week I'll have to go before church for PEC and ward council. You know, PEC for 30 minutes and then ward council for an hour after that. And then we'll have our church meetings. And on the alternate weeks is when we'll have our presidency meetings. And so that way we're always staying connected and we're able to meet, you know, pretty frequently to meet the demands of the quorum and the things that we have to do. So I'm usually there before church. I'm able to kind of see when the guys are getting there every Sunday and talk with them. Through the actual meeting hours, you know, sacrament, I think that's pretty standard. Sunday school, my wife makes fun of me sometimes because I get called up into, like, what I like to call hallway PPIs, where someone just kind of stops me and we end up talking, and then someone else stops and we end up talking. And I tell her, like, I'm establishing connections with my core members and getting to know them and working with them. And she thinks it's just an excuse to not to go to Sunday school. but it really is beneficial for them and for me. So I enjoy being able to talk with them. And sometimes it's about serious matters, so we have to, you know, go into a room and kind of talk about some things. During the actual core meeting, you know, me and my counselors work very closely on the conducting schedules and what needs to be announced and covered. We have a technology that we use for that, as far as a specific app to help us stay connected. And then during the actual core meeting, you know, one of the trainings that I do every time I get like a new presidency or there's any changes is we kind of cover that part in the handbook where it says, you know, if you're in an Elders Quorum presidency meeting, unless a higher authority is there, the Elders Quorum president presides over that meeting. And I just remember the first time I read that, it just kind of hit me. I hadn't really understood it fully, but I saw it as the same responsibility the bishop has during sacrament meeting to make sure that everything that's done is in order and according to the principles of the gospel and to the handbook as far as being doctrinally correct. And so if something the teacher says or a comment that's made that's not correct, you know, you're kind of having to step in and make that correction in the best way you can, whether that's with kind of waiting a moment to see if the teacher themselves is going to correct it or if somebody else is going to make a comment. But, you know, truly being present in everything that's going on and listen to the Spirit and seeing, okay, at what point do I need to say something? At what point do I need to just kind of be quiet and let somebody else do it? Because I think that's a key thing of leadership as well, is just sometimes you need to take a step back and let other people learn from themselves and have that opportunity for them to grow and to show that they know what they're talking about as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You never want to, you know, feel like you're the principal in the room that steps in and, you know, and demands order or anything like that. There's definitely a balance there of stepping back at times, and other times just stepping in nicely and saying, maybe we should go a different way here. So that's a tough thing to learn, for sure.
It is, yes. And fortunately, I've only had to step in maybe once or twice in the past 3 years, so that's good.
Good. So generally, do you have anything during the week that's on the schedule regularly?
Not regularly. We try to limit as much as we can to Sunday, so that when outside of that, you know, we're able to focus more on our individual and family lives and the things we have going on there.
Nice.
What you'll find, though, is there's always something going on, you know.
Right.
You always get those calls about a move. Hey, I know it's Friday and we're moving tomorrow, but can we get some help? You know, you're always going to have something like that come up, or, you know, you'll get the email forwarded to you from the bishop about something that needs to be handled, and you have to work with the high priest group leader on it, or at least society leader, depending on what's going on. So because of that, you know, we try to limit everything else that we do and focus it on Sunday, so that during the week we can focus more on the family.
Sure, ain't nothing wrong with that. Good to hear that. So let's jump in. You mentioned technology is used quite a bit in your quorum. You said you have a pretty basic website you use and so forth. Let's maybe dig into the technology, because this is part where I think a lot, maybe the older priesthood who isn't as familiar with technology, but they could probably figure it out. Some of these ideas may help as far as, you know, the administering part, getting that kind of set and forget it type stuff. So maybe go through some items that you use as far as technology is concerned to lead.
Yeah, so what we do, there's a weekly email that we'll send out that will have a brief summary of the announcements. We found that if you make the email too long, like our Relief Society does, nobody will read it. So we just want to give them bullet points. You know, we make it as short and sweet as possible, and we have links on there. So if they want more information, they just have to click on the link, and then it will take them to the website where they can get all the information. They can choose what it is they want to read and find out more about. But we know there are some people who don't check their email. Even if you have a very tech-savvy quorum, there will be some who will miss it. And so we try to catch them through Facebook or Twitter as well. So every time something gets posted onto our website, we use a service called IFTTT, if this, then that. It shows, okay, if this blog post comes up on the website, then I want you to post a link to it to Twitter. And then our Twitter account is linked to our Facebook account, so anything that comes up on Twitter comes up on Facebook as well. And so that way, you know, somebody, they're going to check their Facebook. People do it two or three times a day, if not more. And so they'll be able to kind of see, oh, hey, there's the announcement about our next game night. I forgot about that. I need to tell my wife that I'm going to be gone that Thursday night so we can go play some Mario Kart.
Yeah. Nice. So do you have a Facebook group then that you've created that is private? Or?
It's a Facebook page. So anybody who wants, kind of like Twitter, can go in and start following and get the information. You know, because when it comes to the, at least with Twitter and Facebook, we want to keep it as open as possible so that it's easier for them to follow. The more steps you have for them to do, the harder it's going to be. So if they have to just click like, that's one thing, but they have to request to join a group, or, you know, it has to be approved. Yeah. A lot of people don't want to go through that. And, you know, we want to be able to catch as many people as we can. And if it just so happens that other people outside of our quorum, you know, like the page and follow it, well, it's still gospel-centered stuff. And
that's right. You know, hasten the work.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, cool. So, and then going back to your website, you know, some may hear that, and be, it's kind of daunting to create a website. So how do you, what have you used to build that website? You said it wasn't too intense.
No. So again, the website, we say that just part of the marketing, that spin on it. It's really just a blog, through Blogger.
Oh, okay.
It's connected with our a Google account that we have for the quorum. So it's very easy to update and maintain. And we made it look more like a website when with the theme that we went with, so how the layout is. Mm-hmm. And we added some additional pages that allow you to do some extra things online if you are so inclined to do so. So we'll have our calendar up there. And on the calendar, you'll be able to see, you know, when the temple's open, when we have our meetings on Sunday, any activities that we have planned and we put on there. And have the state calendar, it has the lesson on there. So there's different things they can look at through that. We'll have a link to the photo directory that we take our own pictures of and have on, since LDS.org, not everybody has put their picture up there, so we want to make sure that we're catching all everyone. And we also have some other things that you can do as far as using Google Forms. So we're able to set it up. So if you want to, if you don't want to call one of us, or you get tired of us calling you or emailing you about your home teaching reports, and you just want to, you know, cut us out of the process, that's fine. You can do it online. You know, go online, you put your name, put your companion's name, and the families you visited and how they're doing. And you can just do it that way, and you never have to speak to us about it. We don't have to nag you, I guess you could say.
Sure.
I think one of the things that I've kind of been the happiest with is that we work closely with our ward employment specialist. And just using Google services, we're able to have this document on there where he can go in, he can put his information, put any employment tips that he has, and then as he is sent or receives information about any jobs that he knows about, he can put it on this shared document that we have with him where the link is at on the website, and then it just updates. And so within 5 minutes, somebody can go click on that document and look at it and view it. They won't be able to edit or anything, but they can view it and say, oh, hey, here's a new job posting that was put up just a few minutes ago. Maybe I can call this person and check it out. And so it's a good way to get the most up-to-date information out to the people as quickly as possible and the widest range possible as well.
That's cool. So going back to the employment info, do you post jobs up there that people know about, or how does that work specifically?
So if there's a specific job, because sometimes the stake or the temple or one of the other wards, you know, they'll have information about our particular job, and so we can post it as just as a, like an announcement, so it's its own separate post. And then in addition to that, there's this little link that you click on that will take you to that view-only document that we have access to, and the employment ward employment specialist will have access to, that he can copy and paste information into there as well. So there's two different ways you can get access to it depending on what it is that you're looking for and what it is that's going on.
Cool. And then you also mentioned a project management system you use, and I'm a big fan of project management systems. I use Asana, and I use it in my business as well, and so it's kind of just bled over into my church work. And I did an interview over on Mormon Life Hacker about that, and how we use it and so forth. But you use one called Trello, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O, Trello. Yeah, it's been very effective. We started using it maybe 6 months ago. And so the premise is that you create different boards, and then on each board you can create different cards. So we have a board that's for our presidency meetings. So it just says presidency meetings. And then on there's lists that says to do, doing, and done. And so you're able to add a card to a list. So everybody has access to it. So I'll say, okay, Sunday, guys, we're having our meeting. I'm going to put some agenda items up there. If there's something that you want to discuss, just add a card to the list. And then we'll add the card, and then we can organize it according to priority. And then as the meeting's going on, we take one card and we just slide it over to doing. That's what we're talking about at that specific moment. And what's kind of cool is it's almost real time. So as I'm sliding it over, everybody on their computer or iPad or phone, however they use it, they see me sliding it over on their screen as well. And then as we're talking about that one particular topic, our secretary, he can click on the card and see the back of it and add all the notes. And then with it, you know, it has the ability to add pictures, add links, has checklists in there. So if we're planning an activity, we can make our own separate board about that, what needs to be done. And it has the ability where you can assign certain people to certain things and set deadlines. So it's been very beneficial, and it's what we use for our announcements every Sunday and for our weekly email. So we have a separate board that says announcements, and it has two lists on there. One says email and one says third hour. So anything that we need included in the email that week, I just put that on the list and our secretary will see it. I can add additional notes on the back if he needs more info about what it is that I'm actually talking about. So he gets it that way. And then for the third hour, whoever's conducting that day, they can just use that, and they don't have to actually talk to me beforehand like, hey, what are we talking about today? What are the announcements? What's going on? You know, they already know it's right there. So we'll be able to be better connected.
And then with your presidency, as you put different items up there, does it have a feature that you can kind of start have a discussion regarding a certain point or a task?
There is, yeah. It has a comment feature. So you can comment if you want to provide updates on where you're at with something. Yeah, you can add comments.
Perfect. Yeah, and we use that a lot. You know, I've been in many meetings where you're either thinking of names for callings or just trying to hammer something out, and you're spending all this time just trying to rack your brain. And so if you can do all that outside of the meeting where people say, you know, here's three people I'd recommend, the other counselor says here's three more, and then when you get to the meeting, you're talking about people and making decisions rather than trying to think of ideas, because a lot of the ideas will come throughout the week. So that's powerful to use. And really with a software, an online software or a app like Trello, you really just have to jump in and start using it. I mean, you're not going to break anything, and you're going to see the value as you start it. So I'm sure people hearing about this the first time, they're like maybe overwhelmed, like, man, what is he even talking about, or how does he do that? And you just jump in and start, and it's amazing how fast you pick it up. So
yeah, and I found it very user friendly.
Cool. Perfect. And I also love the IFTTT, if that, then this website. If you haven't been there, I highly recommend it. Just even in personal tasks or whatever, you kind of become your own programmer and can make these, what they call recipes, to simplify and streamline things in your life and obviously in your leadership. So that's good. All right. Now we move on to the holy grail of Elder Scorn Presidents, which is... home teaching, and this will just kind of conclude with having discussion here, but this could probably be the whole discussion. But you know, as you mentioned earlier, and I had the same feeling, you get called as Elder Scorn President, you think, I am going to be the difference maker. I'm going to be the guy they call that figures out home teaching. And then you get in the thick of it, and you're just like, whoa, this is like a daunting human nature experiment that's just gone crazy, and you can just become consumed with it, or you can find ways to balance it and manage it and so forth. So where would you start with home teaching? What are your thoughts on it?
So home teaching, we've tried quite a few different things over the years. And I think probably the most effective is one that we've done most recently. And I say it's probably the most effective just because it most closely follows what the handbook is actually telling you to do. Because if you look at Handbook 2 in Section 7 regarding Melchizedek Priesthood Leadership, you know, that subsection of home teaching, mm-hmm. it tells you the specific people that you need to be focusing on. As far as new members, recettled less actives, widows, single sisters, single adults, those individuals that might not have a stable family environment or could most benefit from the visit. And so I think that kind of is a different approach than what most people actually do. I mean, yeah, when somebody gets baptized, you know, we get them the home teachers, but we also have, okay, here we have the Jones family. They're active. They come every single week. They're all born in the church. They have no problems. We're going to make sure they have home teachers too. And that's not really the case. According to the handbook, it doesn't actually say, you know, active families are a priority. And so we had to kind of flip the way we looked at everything and say, okay, well, you know what? We're actually at the bottom of the list. Me, as the Elder's Quorum president, I should be the last person getting home taught out of everybody in the quorum. We need to focus on those that would be able to benefit from it the most. And so why I enjoy having home teachers around, we had to take it a little bit differently. So I'm big into Excel and using spreadsheets and numbers to help kind of simplify things. So we sat down, we wrote down a list of every single person that we're assigned to home teach, and then we created columns for each of these areas that the handbook outlines as far as the new members, the receptive less actives, etc. And so we went, okay, here's sister number one. Is she a new member? No. Is she a receptive less active? Yes. Is she single? Yes. And so we went down and did that for every single person. And so, you know, you can put a very simple formula into Excel that counts the number of yeses per row. And so we were able to see, okay, this person has four yeses, this person has two, this person only has one, and here I am as eloquent president, I have zero. And so then you just kind of sort that one column that totals all of them. And so you have all the top people at the top. And so that's where we started. So if this sister, number 27 on our list, actually has a score of 4, she's the most important person that needs to be being home taught right now, according to the handbook. And so she's the first person to be assigned. And then you have me and my counselors and the other active people. We're all the way at the bottom of the list with a 0. So it's not like we won't be assigned a home teacher per se, but it's... we're just going to be a less of a priority when it comes to actually making the assignments.
Wow. Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking that's the most obvious idea, but I've never really thought of, is just actually ranking, you know, according to classifications that you feel is important. And it may be different ward to ward, but those you mentioned seem to be pretty universal across the church that should be higher priority, and literally, and maybe it's because I'm not an analytical person, but in literally ranking them and then saying, yeah, this is the focus of for our flock, I guess. That's cool. That's a great way to approach it. Yeah. And that is such a tough paradigm shift is because a new Elders Quorum president comes in and sees the active members as low-hanging fruit and thinks, well, we might as well get the low-hanging fruit. They're all here. We can at least set up an appointment and visit them. And then you just get carried away with visiting the bishop and his counselors and, you know, the Relief Society president and the ward mission leader. And then that those people that truly need the priority set, they're forgotten, and not because anybody meant to forget about them, but it's just the way it works out. They just get pushed down on the priority scale. So that's a great system. That's really cool.
Yeah, we've been happy with it. You know, like as you mentioned, how it's going to vary from ward to ward, from quorum to quorum. And so we did add like a special like other column, so we could add a yes in there if there was somebody we felt really needed to have home teachers, but didn't meet the criteria for any of the columns that were on there. So that way they would still, you know, have a higher ranking and be considered. But in the end, it just comes about, you know, kind of shucking that tradition that we've kind of, that mindset we've had as far as how home teaching is and how it should be and how it's been set up, and realizing if you do this new system, it's going to be very helpful for those who need it the most, but at the same time, just recognizing and go ahead and accept the fact that your numbers are going to go down. And so we made the conscious decision. We felt it was the most appropriate, and it's my personal philosophy that numbers, they don't matter at all. It's all about the individual and meeting with them and or the family unit. And the numbers, it's just something that's required because we do have to track. It's part of the return and report. Mm-hmm. And it can be an indication. But if you have a situation kind of like what you were saying, yeah, you can assign all the strong home teachers to teach all the active families, and your home teaching numbers are going to be great. But it doesn't. It's not necessarily a true reflection of the ministry that's actually going on and how strong you are as a ward. Because if you're visiting the less active, you're strengthening and uplifting them so they become strong, and then you have more people as a base of strength as a church in that area to go out and strengthen even more.
Perfect. Yeah, such a great point. Is as you mentioned the true, how did you put it, the true fellowshipping of the ward, and it's easy to get caught up thinking that percentage is what that translates to. And if from my perspective, as I've thought about this, I look at it from the perspective of the main, like, church headquarters, and they have all these wards out there, and they're thinking, all right, what are some key indicators that we can track to really understand what's going on and the growth that's happening? And home teaching is just one of those indicators to give them an idea. And so it's important to obviously report it, track it, you know, put it into the system so they have those numbers. I don't even know if, you know, who knows where they end up. But nonetheless, that gives them an idea. But as far as from a ward standpoint, there's not, as far as hastening the work or reactivation and those things, if you just focus on that home teaching number, it's going to give you the wrong perspective, the wrong result of, I guess I should say, it's going to give you the wrong value of what fellowshipping is happening and what the sense of that community of the ward is, where I kind of feel like it all comes down to sacrament attendance. If somebody doesn't feel comfortable coming to sacrament or they're not coming to sacrament meeting, there's something missing there, and that's, you know, where to focus as a priority to figure out, why don't you feel comfortable coming to sacrament meeting, rather than why don't you let me in your home once a month? You know, that's kind of a deceiving perspective to have. So I love that. That's great.
Yeah, the numbers can be very misleading. I recall one particular zone leader I had on the mission. He was all about the numbers. He didn't really care about the actual people you were home teaching, but rather the number of people that you were teaching and working towards baptism. So he wanted to see, okay, how many baptismal challenges did you have this week? How many would date? How many discussions did you teach? And so you could be working with these individuals that are progressing along and doing well, but if the numbers aren't there, then he didn't really care. And so me and my companion, we came up with a system to give him what he wanted, but then still be able to focus on what we needed to actually do. And so we would find people that would be willing to talk to us. Where I was in Mexico, that usually is the drunk people or the homeless population. So they would be always willing to talk to us. And so we would go and we would just start talking with them. Hey, sir, did you know that Jesus Christ is your Savior and that He loves you and He wants you to get baptized? In fact, you can get baptized this Sunday. And I would look at my companion. I was like, did you hear that? That's a baptismal challenge with date. And then I would ask him again. I was like, that's two, actually. And so we would kind of get that out of the way. Just, you know, get the numbers so he could have it, you know, our zone leader. He could get off our back. And then we could spend the rest of the time doing what we wanted to do and what we felt was best for our area at that time, working with the individuals we felt we needed to work with.
Nice. All right. Well, and that's, again, as a leader, as you, again, there's that balance of numbers where it's not like they're just fluff by any means. Obviously, there's a purpose in it, but if you base your leadership around it, then you lose trust, you lose confidence in those that you lead, and then, like you said, like your mission example, then they don't see the value in those numbers, and then it decreases either way. And that's where I got as Elder's Corn President. Like, man, I push so hard, but then the number keeps dropping. Like, what's happening? What am I doing wrong? You know, and you get just overwhelmed and consumed by this idea of that percentage each month. So, very good. Well, LDS EQ Prez, this has been good. And I appreciate you taking the time to share some of these. I've got some ideas, you know, your spreadsheet ranking. That's on my ward council agenda now. I'm going to take that and see if we can apply that. And that's really what I want to get out of these interviews, as you as a leader share how you lead, especially in the practical matters, that others may take some of these ideas and apply it. And together we're building the kingdom. And that's the point. So, any last final words from the Elders Quorum president of the world of Twitter?
The only thing that I would say is that you never understand what's actually going on with a person in their personal life or in their calling until you've actually walked in their shoes. Before I was in an Elders Quorum presidency, I never knew what went on behind the scenes. I just didn't know. And then I was called as a first counselor, and I was like, oh, wow, there's a lot of stuff that has to be taken care of. And even then, I didn't really understand what the Elders Quorum president was doing behind the scenes that even then. And so when I became the Elders Quorum president, another layer was kind of pulled back. And I realized, oh my goodness, all this other stuff is going on too that I didn't even know about before. And I think, you know, it kind of goes on and on. So I'm sure there's things that the bishop goes through that I don't know about. There's another layer there, and so on and so forth. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that, and we don't really understand everything that our leaders are doing for us. And I think the same thing applies for the people, you know, that we're sitting next to in sacrament meeting or in our quorum meetings. You know, we look at them and everything looks fine and dandy, but we don't realize what's actually going on. There was a stake training a couple years back, and the stake president was saying, these are the key areas that people are having issues with in the stake. And it was like addictions, law of chastity, word of wisdom, all this other stuff. And I'm like, man, we don't have any of those problems in our quorum. We're doing great. But then within 2 weeks, the bishop's like, so there's this guy having marital troubles due to this, that, and the other. And it was related to word of wisdom. He's like, I need you to kind of just sit down with him, talk with him, kind of see where it's at. And then like a year later, there was a guy, you know, law chastity issues where it was causing significant marital problems with him and his family. And it was just kind of like, man, you just don't know. And so I think that's kind of comes back to one of the key principles of the gospel overall, as far as that love that emulates the pure love of Christ, you know, having that as our example and practicing that and just being there unconditionally for our brothers and sisters so we can uplift and sustain them.
This has been another episode of How I Lead on the Leading LDS Podcast. Be sure to visit leadinglds.com for even more in-depth resources to being a better leader in the LDS world. Especially make sure as you go there, at the very top of the screen is a button to click to join the Leading LDS newsletter, where we send out a somewhat weekly newsletter that notifies you of new content on Leading LDS and additional resources that can only be found through the Leading LDS newsletter. Until next time, be a leader, not a calling.